UK Wine Show, show number 3. Cheers, and welcome to the UK Wine Show. This is show number 3. This week's show is sponsored by 3050. 3050 is the wine tasting company for your private and corporate events. That's thirtyfifty.co.uk. And this week we're going to be talking to Owen Elias from Chapel Down. Owen's been making wine in the UK for about 14 years now. He's had a wealth of experience and seen the industry change quite considerably over that time. And then in the interview, we're going to be talking to him about some of those changes, as well as what he thinks of the future of the UK wine scene. But before we do that, we'll get into the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. First piece of news is about sparkling wines. They're starting to be drunk more than just for special occasions, as many can now compete price-wise with a bottle of wine. This has been helped by the new well getting in on the act in the UK, with sparklers that filled the price gap between the more expensive champagne and cheaper Spanish cava. Cava is still the number one selling sparkling wine here, taking 38% of bottle sales, while Jacob's Creek's $7.99 sparkling wine is the biggest selling wine in the market. Champagne takes 30% of volume, and Italian sparkling wines take 12%. Next up is news on wine sales between the £6 to £7 mark. Sales in this price bracket were up 27% in supermarkets over the last year, making it the fastest growing price band in the UK. According to the figures that were released by Nielsen, the top selling wine is the French brand Blaison de Bourgogne, and their sales are nearly 70% up. The second fastest was Spain's Campo Viejo Reserva Rioja, while Brown Brothers came in at fifth place. It's no wonder drinkers are happy to spend a bit more than the average selling price, which is, I think, around £3.50, when this price bracket of 6 to 7 virtually guarantees a good quality fruit-driven wine, so at last consumers are starting to see the benefits of spending a little bit more on their wine. And finally, some news on the English wine scene. Row upon row of vines are going to become a common sight on the landscape of southern England as grape growing is set to increase enormously. This year alone, well over 120 hectares of vines have gone into the ground, and this is just the start of a big expansion plan by the major UK players. Dermot Sugrue, winemaker at sparkling wine specialist Knightimber, promises a big increase in production around 2008 from the 48,000 bottles it currently produces, while Chapel Down expects to plant about 200 hectares over the next 5 years. At Ridgeview, owner and winemaker Mike Roberts says its planting is on track for 250,000 to 280,000 bottles in 2008, against a current figure of 50,000 this year. Most of the grapes going into the ground are Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, which is not surprising since most winemakers see their future growth in sparkling wine. So perhaps, after all, instead of being a nation of shopkeepers, we're set to become a nation of winemakers. What do you think, Chris?
I think Napoleon will be turning over in his grave. It's quite interesting. When I was talking to Dermot, he was a bit concerned that all this production is going to come onto the market in one foul hit, so there might be a small glut of production for a while. But Dermot seemed to think that the nice thing about making sparkling wines is you can leave the wine sitting on the yeast, that dead yeast that got the sparkle into it, for a long period of time, so you've got some sort of buffer zone. A bit better than perhaps the Australians, who have got real problems. They're pulling out vines and the government's subsidising them quite heavily at the moment, simply because they still haven't got through their 05 vintages, and the 06 are about to go into store.
I think the other good thing is that if we don't manage to win the World Cup this year, then in 4 years' time, in 2010, we'll have plenty of English sparkling wine to celebrate with.
I'll say cheers to that. Next we have an interview with Owen Elias from Chapel Down. Owen, English Wine Group is one of the leading winemakers in the UK. What do you think the secret of the success is?
It's partly our size, I suppose, and partly our equipment. We have very good growers, we have very good winery, and a good sales team as well.
That you reckon it's part of your team that's...
winemaking is a bit of a team activity. You rely on an awful lot of other people to get everything right.
How many winemakers have you got on site?
Well, I'm the sort of head winemaker, and then I have two qualified winemakers and a couple of winery assistants.
They're the ones who clean out the barrels and all the fun jobs?
Well, everyone does those jobs.
I understand you guys buy some of your grapes, and you grow some here on the Tenterden site, but you buy grapes from around. Who looks after the viticultural side of those wineries?
We currently source from about 23 other vineyards. We've got a couple of very, very big growers. They're farmers and overlook the production. I mean, Chapel Down is a winery. We don't profess to be growers or landowners. We like other people to grow the grapes. We think farmers probably grow them best.
As a winery, that's one of your key attributes.
I mean, Chapel Down is a winery. That's how it started off. It started off without any vineyards at all. In actual fact, it started off in an industrial estate in Burgess Hill.
As professional winemakers, get the quality from the wines?
Yes, it's certainly English wine has become much more professional, and it needs to be. I mean, this is not it's not a hobby. This is a business that turns over £2 million a year. You know, and it's. You have to have the right gear, you have to have people who know what they're doing. It's a professional business now.
What do you think the future is of the English wine group and English wine as well?
We're hoping to get bigger. The English wine industry will get bigger. There's been an awful lot of planting in England this year. I think well over 300 acres of new vines have gone in. We've got 120 acres of that is going in for us. We're aiming to plant up 500 acres over the next 5 years, you know, 150 acres a year, and other people are doing the same. It's mainly sparkling that people are planting for, so it's Pinot and Chardonnay, and English sparkling wine certainly has a very good future.
It's got a very good reputation. A lot of people compare it quite positively to Champagne. What about some of the other varieties or styles of wine?
It certainly has the reputation now in sparkling in competitions and things, you know, gold medals and beating the French in their own game, and the French coming over here and sniffing around land. But yeah, no, we make other good wines as well. Our whites, they're light and aromatic. You know, they're quite generally lower in alcohol than most wines from abroad. They're very attractive, floral usually. Acid levels are crisp. So you've got varieties like Bacchus. It has sort of a Sauvignon characteristic. Sometimes it's got gooseberries and sometimes it's a bit more Sancerre-like. So I think it's probably fair to describe it in that way. What else do we do? We do rosé. Again, I think England is a country that's suited for rosé, especially, you know, the more refreshing, slightly more acidic ones. You know, so they're not floppy and fat. They're sharp and fresh.
You were saying earlier when we were talking that you're looking at planting or growing some Chardonnay, or making some Chardonnay wines, one of the first to try and produce a Chardonnay wine. What do you think that'll be coming out like?
Well, I think it's mainly the Grand Chablis Grand Cru style, but you know, Chardonnay is you know, people have been growing it for sparkling now for 10 years. I mean, 10 years ago people said you couldn't grow it for sparkling. I think you'll find it for stills now as well. I mean, there's a lot of experimentation going on with clones and rootstocks and things like that. And we're getting some very interesting fruit coming through. It's you know, it's in small amounts at the moment, but the whole grape mix sort of here at Chapel Down is changing. I think 5 years ago we had 100 tons of Sauvignon Blanc and no Pinot and Chardonnay, and this year that's completely reversed. So it's the whole premiumness of English wine is changing.
You mentioned rootstocks and vines. Just for the people out there who aren't sure, ever since the Laos phylloxera destroyed much of the European vineyards, there's been a need to graft vines onto different roots, that way protecting the vines from being eaten by the Laos. You were talking earlier about, you know, you're starting to get an understanding of what sort of roots grow well in the soils versus the fruiting vine. How does that fit with you guys now? You know, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think the whole thing of rootstock selection and clonal selection is comparatively new in England, probably led by the Australians again, and maybe the French. Different soils affect vines in different ways, and all vines are now grafted onto different rootstocks. Originally that was to protect them from phylloxera, but now what they've found is that certain rootstocks are more tolerant of lime or drought resistant, or tolerant of high salt levels and things like that. So you can actually match your rootstock to your soil and to your vine. They also control the vigour of the plant, which actually is how quickly the vine grows, and the rootstock can affect, say, the harvesting of your plant or the flowering of your plant by, you know, by 5 to 10 days. So if you're wanting to crop a bit earlier, you select your rootstock for that vine.
I know in Bordeaux you get some wine growers or vineyard growers who get quite nervous towards the end of the season with frosts, and or at the beginning of the season as well. Down here in Kent, the weather's beautiful today.
Yeah.
How does it change? You know, is it always as sunny? English weather.
It is actually. People think that you go across the channel and you put your swimming trunks on, you know. But it's very sunny in Kent, and we don't actually get much rain. The southeast England, east coast, they're dry areas. The temperatures we get here are, they're almost on. They're only about 1 degree less than, say, the Champagne area, on average. We have a longer growing season. I mean, we harvest usually in October, whereas, say, in Champagne, they'd be harvesting in September.
Just moving on about yourself there, Alan. One question I must ask. I moved over to the UK from New Zealand, and when I heard about English wine, I was a bit shocked and a bit worried. I met a few crazy New Zealand winemakers in the past, but I thought you guys must be absolutely off your tree. What was running through your mind when you took the plunge into the wine trade 14 years ago?
I'm not sure. It must have been blank, really. I've no idea. I don't know why I did it, to be honest. I'd just got married, and I'd left my previous employment, and I just decided to become a winemaker. Much to everyone's horror.
Yeah, I imagine. How would you best describe yourself? If you were a wine, what sort of wine would you be?
Dry and acid, I think, is probably what we'd have to come.
The dryness is to do with your humour, yeah?
Well, or lack of it.
Yeah. just moving on to the English wine scene a wee bit. You were one of the first people to graduate from Plumpton as a winemaker. Looking back now, what do you think the biggest improvement has been over the last 14 years?
There was no career structure. I mean, well, still, it's pretty limited career-wise as to be an English winemaker, but Plumpton was the only place you could go, and I was on, the first course there. I think one of the transformations in the English industry has been the use of professional winemakers. I mean, that's... when I started, I think there were perhaps two. There was David Cowdroy and John Warrenchek at Valley Vineyards, who were Australian trained. I think David had been to Roseworthy, and they really transformed the industry from the amateur pottering around to professional. You know, they brought in stainless steel, they brought in dried yeast, and you need to be trained, you need to know.
What sort of styles of wine do you think, as the trade moves forward, everybody knows about the English sparkling wines, but and you touched on your Chardonnay that you're going to be producing. Grand Cru Chablis style.
Yeah.
What else do you think might come out of the woodwork in the next 10 years?
Well, obviously, apart from the sparkling, I think you'll see some interesting Pinot Noir red. You'll see a lot more rosé. You'll probably see some Chardonnay in various forms. But I think the big driver is sparkling, to be honest. I don't know, it'd be nice to think that someone would plant some Riesling somewhere, because no one's had a look at that yet.
Really?
No, it's, I think, right site, right clone. Burgundy red style, reds and whites, maybe some Riesling.
Yeah. Excellent. What we're going to do now is try a couple of your wines. We've got your, the sparkling wine, what have we got there?
I've got the Pinot Reserve 2001, just won the Southeast Wine of the Year 2 days ago. Gold medal, yeah, very pleased with it.
Yeah,
it's a traditional method, about 60% Pinot Noir and Pinot Blanc.
One of the things about champagne or sparkling wines is how long you leave the wine sitting on the yeast after the second fermentation.
Yeah,
how long do you guys leave this wine on the yeast?
Well, this is 2001, so it was probably bottled around in the summer of 2002, and. We operate a recently disgorged policy. This wine will have been disgorge only a month ago, and we disgorge on demand, so we don't keep our wine for very long on the cork like some people do.
When you say disgorge, you mean remove the sediment?
Yeah,
from
when you're taking the yeast out of the wine.
Let's have a bit of a smell on the nose.
It's quite a sort of delicate nose. It's a lemony, citrusy sort of flavours.
On the palate?
Yeah. It's quite a rich flavour, and you know, it has a sort of complexity and intensity that you know the years have added to it. But you can see the colour is still quite pale. It's not a dark colour. And that's basically you could keep this for 10 years on its yeast and it would still be fresh.
Really? Mm. It's got that nice sort of citrusy finish, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's quite nice. Would you recommend it with something like shellfish or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, no, I'd have it with oysters, fried sea bass, something like that. Yeah.
And when do you think people should be drinking it? What sort of mood or
nice summer day?
Nice summer day.
Nice winter evening.
Yeah, pretty much any part of the day, really, isn't it? We've got another wine there, your English Rose, which is quite an interesting name.
Yeah, this is... we're making, I think, four times more rosé now than we made 2 years ago. It's very popular, and deservedly so. I mean, this is it's a blend of Rondeau, Pinot Noir, and... Schoenberger. I mean, what you've got here is you've got sort of strawberries. It's really strawberries. And a bit of raspberry, actually.
Nice and aromatic.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with English wines, you know, rosés and whites, and the reds, in actual fact, because it's cool, the aromas are there, and they're kept, you know, a bit of early bottling. You can see it's got a slight spritz still from the CO2, from the fermentation. I mean, that's the style. It is again, it's fresh and young.
I must admit, rosé I often find is a bit bland, whereas this has got lots and lots of flavour coming through.
Yeah, no, there. It doesn't have to be bland or flabby. I mean, this is a...
Finishes quite cleanly again. That's that nice crisp acidity coming through. I notice you call it English Rose as opposed to rosé.
Yeah.
What's the reason behind that?
Well, it's a joke, isn't it? Have you not got it?
I get the icon. And how many bottles of that do you think you'll sell, or did you make this year? This is the 05 English Rose.
About 30,000 bottles.
30,000? Excellent. Alright. And just finishing up, thanks very much for spending the time with us, Alan. Do you have a wine tip for us?
I think my tip would be not to fill your glass too full. Only have your glass half full, and you'll get the wine will taste nicer. You get the aromas. Well, let's assume you've got some nice wine in your glass, because if it's crap wine, it'll make it taste even worse. So if you're serving crap wine, fill the glass right up.
Well, hopefully we won't be drinking any of that here. So you reckon fill it all up,
half full, and it'll taste much nicer.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks very much, Alan.
Okay.
Cheers.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Owen. Next week we're going to be talking to Peter Ferreira. He's the winemaker at Graham Beck Wines. Graham Beck Wines were rated recently by Matthew Jukes as one of the top sparkling wines, including champagne, in the UK. So it'll be great to see what Peter has to say about the South African wine scene, particularly since it's changed considerably since apartheid. That's the UK Wine Show. Cheers.